Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering.
Go ahead. Again, hold on.
Okay.
Take your time.
This is very narrow.
Yes.
We're climbing a tiny stairway into the steeple of the Old North Church. It was here, on a dark night in 1775, that most famous of the Boston Revolutionaries warned his comrades that the British were coming.
So Paul Revere did stand in this room. When he was 15 years old, he was one of the first bell ringers at Old North. And it's not an exaggeration to imagine that his familiarity with this steeple, with how incredibly large it loomed in the city skyline, such as it was, made this the perfect place for the signal lanterns to be held. So he was thinking years.
But underneath us, on the church floor, there are clues to a darker history behind this physical icon of American independence. We traveled to Old North Church recently to talk with Catherine Matthews, the co-director of education at Old North Church and Historic Site, about these new revelations. And we sat in the box pew that one Captain Newark Jackson used to own.
What we found out about Captain Jackson was that he, on his last voyage, the voyage during which he was murdered during a mutiny, he had been carrying enslaved individuals. Specifically, he was carrying enslaved children.
You first got an inkling of that in a researcher's book, but then Old North Church sought more research actively. Is that right?
In Jared Hardesty's first book, Unfreedom, he referenced Newark Jackson. At that point, our knowledge of him was extremely limited. When we first were considering talking about Jackson in our interpretive programming, we did look into his background. And aside from the mutiny, we didn't find anything in particular. He was a rather unknown individual. He was nothing special.
He was murdered on his ship.
Yes,
in
a mutiny. And so when Jared's book came out, our executive director read it, said, whoa, you know, Newark Jackson, familiar name. He invited Jared to speak. That began a relationship when Jared spoke here at Old North, and then we asked him, could you look into this more? Could you do more? And he did. And he started to research. His research was painstaking. It was worldwide. It was intensive. He found things over the course of 2 or 3 years, if not longer, that changed the course of our interpretation.
Did you suspect that this darkness, this evil part of his history, was there?
Well, we found out initially that he owned enslaved individuals, and that was not shocking because there was slavery in Boston. And among the wealthier classes, that would not be uncommon, but we did not anticipate the turn that the research took.
Is Jackson the only historic parishioner who engaged in slave trafficking, or are there others? Do you expect to find more stories?
Well, one of the things that even we as staff learned the night of our panel discussion was that Jackson was part of a group that were involved in smuggling and therefore involved in slave trading, and they had connections to this church. So we know that some of the money that went to build the first steeple came from these sources.
The steeple.
We know that money for the bells came from similar kinds of trade and people.
So how did you, as a community here at Old North Church, begin to reconcile this proud piece of American history that was rooted in freedom and American independence with the realization that there were parishioners here who were creating a complete lack of freedom and independence for other human beings? How do you grapple with that contradiction?
That's exactly what we do every day here. We look at the stories, all of the stories, whether they are stories of Revere and the Patriots or whether they are stories that show our darker side of our nation and how it was developing. We believe very strongly that we have to tell a comprehensive history, and yes, there are facts that are very, very, very hard to hear, but that does not mean you walk away from them. It means that you include them.
Since you got this research, you've learned these new truths. Have you reached out either to the African-American community in Boston about that, or have you considered trying to find descendants of any of the slaves that Jackson traded?
So this is the beginning of the process. We'll start there. And to the second point, it is very difficult, and it is a tragic fact of history that very often those voices are the ones that we do not have records of. That said, one of the things that we're committed to is as much as possible finding out the stories of the Black congregants that we have some records of, and to research them further. Unfortunately, tragically, enslaved individuals, there was a certain degree of anonymity.
Erasure.
Yes, yeah. Erasure is a perfect word.
We associate the North End so much with immigration.
Yeah.
With Italian immigrants, Jewish immigrants. There is a long history of African Americans in this area,
yes,
as well. Prince Hall, the African American abolitionist who was considered the founder of Black Freemasonry, is, yep, buried at Copps Hill Burying Ground.
Mm-hmm.
Does the history of Black congregants go all the way back to the founding of the church?
Goes back to the very, very beginning of the church.
Is that surprising?
No, I don't believe it's surprising. Though, I will say that I have learned since I've taken this job so much more that I was not aware of from my American history classes. We know that the North Gallery, right up there,
It's like a balcony,
was where Black congregants, whether they were free or enslaved, were sitting. To our best knowledge, they sat on benches, and northern exposures are brutally cold. It's still cold up there, even now. So they were the least comfortable seats by far.
So now the church, both as a congregation and as an historical institution, has decisions to make,
mm-hmm,
about what to do physically with this reality, with the markings of Jackson and, mm-hmm, other people engaged in slave trafficking, with that steeple, with nameplates. There's a chocolate shop, mm-hmm, that is a sort of a supporting business of Old North Church,
mm-hmm,
with Captain Jackson's name.
Mm-hmm.
What decisions do you make now about how to handle the physical markings that help draw traffic and contributions, et cetera, but have this history?
Well, this is going to be the focus of a tremendous amount of work as we go forward. Right now, we've been rewriting our scripts that our educators deliver to our visitors. We have been training our educators and our staff. We have been looking at exactly what you've noted, all of the signage that we have, and determining what needs to be changed, what needs to be made more accurate, what is the best way to ensure that we're telling the story throughout the entire site. And it is an entire site story, because while the chocolate demonstration pertains specifically now to the Jackson name, what we learned is that this entire church historically had connections to this trade. So it's a far more comprehensive project for us, and it will be a project that takes us time to do right and time to do with appropriate conversation communally.
I'm imagining that there's a continuum of views on this, mm-hmm, from don't do anything differently to it's all got to go. How do you think about where the appropriate place to land on such a continuum is?
So we tell the truth. We tell the comprehensive truth. The only limitation truly is making sure that we find an approach that the visitors can understand and absorb in the limited amount of time that they're with us.
Do you feel like there's anything you've learned from this process that would be useful to the other cultural and historic institutions in Boston that either are grappling with their history of slavery and racism now or will be sometime in the near future?
I think that our commitment to being very transparent and to being unafraid to look ugliness in the eye has in some ways given us courage. Just go ahead and do it. You know, tell your truth, tell your stories. It's only right that everyone's voice is heard. So with that in mind, go forth.
Do you think at any point there will be amends to be made?
I consider truth-telling to be the ultimate. I really feel that it is to, if we can restore some voice to people who've been unheard for so long, that is crucial. So we're going to start with telling our truth.
Is there a way for us to get to a point where we understand our history such that we can celebrate what is great about it while we fully embrace the responsibility for what is terrible about it?
I believe so. I believe that's our job. I think that history, it's not an either or, it's an and. We just keep adding the ands, and we accept them. And the beauty of studying history, and the reason that historic sites are really important, is that it offers us this moment to look back and accept the totality of our history, and then to say, okay, here we are, and where do we want to be?
That was Catherine Matthews, co-director of education at Old North Church and Historic Site. And if you want to see photos from our visit to Old North Church, you can visit our website, radioboston.org. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Jamie Bologna, and Walter Wuthman. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.